Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. If you knew the late Alex Rust when he was a young man, you might not have expected that he'd be the person about whom a documentary would be made. Rust was a farm boy from Indiana who became a day trader working at the Chicago Board of Trade. But by the time he was 25, he realized he had other fish to fry.
Rust quit his job, moved to Florida, and bought a small sailboat and set out on an adventure, learning to sail as he headed for the far corners of the world. His unlikely story is now the subject of a documentary which is screening at the Milwaukee Film Festival called Chasing Bubbles. We're joined now in the studio by film editor Chris Thompson and via Skype by director Topher Cochran and Alex Rust's best friend and fellow traveler Ross Gerber. Cochran explains why Rust was such a compelling subject for a film.
We started making it while he was still alive, and I was interested in telling the story that he had, and then B, sort of exploring his want to tell the story and his want to travel and his sort of need to explore and need to try new things. I thought that was sort of an interesting drive or question about a person as a premise to just as a place to begin.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us have that, you know, we want to explore new things. Most of us don't have quite that passion about it. We're not willing to go off for 3 years without really knowing what we're doing. Most of us aren't brave enough. And I think there was a certain kind of emotional bravery as well as a physical bravery that he had that seemed incredibly appealing.
Yeah, absolutely, Bonnie. This is Ross. And Alex 100% would dive into things headfirst, and it was no different with this trip. He, you know, when he set out on this trip, he was always wanting to record everything that was happening. And so I was actually on the trip with him for a portion of the time. And when we came back, he had all of this footage and he just wanted to share it with people and he didn't know how. And, you know, we were friends with Topher, so Topher was the movie maker. So it just made sense to, you know, start meeting up and seeing what we could make.
3 years worth of filming.
Yeah, I think we had about 100 hours. Chris, how many? Where did we start?
I think it was more like 250 hours if I had to count. But he was filming with flip phones. He was filming with mini DV cameras. He was taking photos. He was recording audio. He was doing interviews with his friends that were on the boat, with strangers, with people on islands or at ports that he met. And I think in a strange way, as we've been making the film, from an editing perspective, we realize that he's actually one of the best filmmakers, untrained filmmakers, that any of us have ever come in contact with. So a lot of the fun of this project was sort of celebrating this unknown, unskilled filmmaker in a sense that he wasn't trained, but he was a natural at it.
Kind of like being a sailor.
Exactly.
For one of the things we found when we were making it, it was a movie about someone who was trying to make a movie about themselves.
But also trying to figure out who he was.
Totally.
And so, yeah. Ross, how much of the trip were you on? It was a three-year journey. How much of that were you actually participating in?
So I was involved for probably 6 months. I was on his initial first sail. So, and you had mentioned that he was learning to sail, and that's completely true. When he jumped on the boat, he had no idea what he was doing, and through the trip, he ended up losing his engine. So he actually had to learn how to become a sailor. And by the end of the trip, he was a phenomenal sailor. But yeah, I was on the trip for a total of 6 months and probably 5,000 miles. So just a portion of the trip, but I did cross the Pacific Ocean. So that was the longest crossing and passage that he did. But I was not along the entire time.
Just a small portion. Only the Pacific Ocean.
Only the Pacific, yeah. Obviously, a trip like that changes everyone, and that's part of the film. He didn't quite know what to do with himself once it was done. For you, what was it like to get off the ship and resume your life?
It was, I was only on the boat, again, for the 6 months, but it was actually tricky after the after the crossing we did. I mean, for about 4 months, it was just, you know, me and Alex in Diego. For the most part, we would see other folks, you know, when we stopped on islands. But it was surprisingly difficult to get used to just to being in like meetings in my corporate life. I had spent so many months just really talking to two other people that once I got back, I've always been a talkative person, but it was actually difficult just to converse and to get up in front of people and kind of get my brain back into this, a completely different mode. So surprisingly more difficult than I thought it would be. I thought it would just be where I left off, and it wasn't at all.
How long did it take you to cross the Pacific?
So it was only from the Galapagos to the first island in French Polynesia. It was 20 days and surprisingly flies by quickly. We were we would sleep in like 3 hour increments because we were on watch, and time 100% flies when you're just completely fatigued because we're sitting in the sun all day long, not sleeping. And I mean, pretty much the only thing we're doing was getting up, you know, looking at the water and then eating and sleeping. So it surprisingly flew those 20 days.
Yeah, I have to say there is something about, as I was watching the film, and I think Alex's footage captured that so well, of just the what it's like to be on that massive water.
It's, you know? It's fun to think that, like, when you're out there, the next closest human, the thing I always say is that the next closest human are the astronauts on the space station. There's nobody for 1,000 miles in any direction.
Yeah, it was very wild being out there, and especially I mean, we had a radio on the boat, but we hadn't set it up quite right, so unfortunately we could only hear what people were saying and we couldn't really talk to anyone. So we would just get, like, it was almost like being on a space station, like this Russian space station, where you'd hear, like, you know, the Sputnik, just, you know, scratchy voices, and we couldn't really communicate with anyone, and we would try to talk and no one would ever respond. So we were very much on our own out there, and that was a little terrifying. But on a sailboat, you're also going so slow, so it's in a funny way, you weren't like scared you were gonna tip because you're going so slowly, but it was terrifying in the fact that if something, you know, if you slipped chopping a vegetable and cut yourself, you were relying on each other for first aid.
Topher, when you started going through the 250 hours of footage, how did you decide what story to tell? I imagine there were lots of different ways you could have approached this movie.
I would watch the footage and initially and interview Alex and then think about what I'd seen, or I would take notes as I was watching footage sort of early on. And I would just like kind of have these questions, and I kept a list of sort of questions about Alex, questions about the story, questions about what might make a person make those choices or want to live that way. And I kind of just kept this list of questions. And then I guess the ones that I thought felt significant or felt important to me, those sort of became an outline and sort of like a structure. And then we would shoot interviews sort of trying to answer those questions. And then at some point, I got as far as I could with the interviews and the watching the footage that I had. And that's when Chris came in, and he had my outline, sort of the structure of what I thought the movie would be. And then he kind of came at it from his own angle and found whole new stories and sort of subplots. And we sort of filled in my sort of broader outline from that. But initially I thought, okay, this is a story about someone who sails around the world. And then as I was interviewing Alex, I started to realize, like, okay, well, maybe it's a story about someone who sails around the world and then how they feel after they've sailed around the world. Like, after you are in your 20s and you wake up every day on a sailboat that's yours and you can decide, okay, are we going to point towards Antarctica? Or are we going to point towards a tropical island? And, okay, are we going to go hang out with these beautiful girls? Or are we going to go hang out with these local people and drink a type of rum that no one's tasted in 50 years. Like, and after you wake up every day with those sorts of choices before you, what do you do next? How do you feel after that? What does that sort of travel or that sort of freedom do to a person? It was, as I was talking to him, questions like that just sort of became present. They were sort of right there. And I was as interested in answering those sorts of things as I was, what does it take to sail around the world? And that's sort of how we got the story. And then all the fun little, I mean, Alex was such a charismatic guy that all the fun adventures and stories and images that he shot and that things that really happened to him, they were just there. And Chris was able to sort of fill in the structure with all these great little moments.
Just to add to that, what I always thought about when, you know, talking to Alex about this huge goal he accomplished is, in football, sometimes they'll interview like a quarterback after he wins a Super Bowl and ask him what he's going to do next. And it's just kind of like this blank stare on his face. You know, he wants to win another Super Bowl. That's been since he was five. That's, you know, that's all. It's been a single-minded goal. And I thought that's kind of a good comparison for Alex, is it's just like he accomplished this huge goal. And, you know, like going to the moon, you know, would be like the next step in his mind. So I think it was interesting to explore, you know, what you do after that.
It didn't make it in the movie, but in some of the interviews we were doing and the research we were doing while we were making the film, we'd found a couple people who had been sailing across oceans with Alex. And, you know, you have, like Ross mentioned earlier, you just have hours and hours to talk. You know, there's no internet. Alex said he had a list of things to Google, like for when they would get to land again. But one of the things that came up, someone had asked Alex, what do you think you'd want to do next as they were sailing across the Indian Ocean? And Alex said, go to Mars. And everyone thought he was joking. But as they, you know, probed further and asked him further about going to Mars, he was able to extrapolate and plan. And I mean, he actually thought that maybe a good goal for him would be to go to space after having sailed around the world, which it's interesting. I mean, someone who's just a kid from middle America who decides I'm going to sail around the world. Why shouldn't he be able to decide to go to space next? I mean, maybe that's the time we live, or maybe that's possible. Maybe anything's possible.
Well, also, he had the kind of personality, it seems, that allowed for that. I mean, he was never going to be happy. At least the man I got to know through the film, he was never going to be happy sitting at a desk. He was never going to be happy having a normal 9-to-5 existence.
Yeah, and I guess I was curious, what's life like for that person? Or can they imagine an endgame? What does happiness look like for somebody who was sailing around the world? They had this very clearly defined goal. I'm going to get on a small fiberglass sailboat that I buy and own myself, and I'm going to sail it around the world, you know, my own way. Once you do that, if you're a searcher, how do you shape your life after that?
One of the most interesting things about putting this film together in hindsight was, like, if you think about your own life, we have periods in time where we advance, whether it's a teacher or a brother or sister, or someone, a mentor, a neighbor. You can remember back to certain months or summers or years of your life where you grew a ton because someone forced you and pushed you to imagine new things, to try new things, and they were just super inspiring to you. And in a way, you grew more in a month or a week or a year than maybe you did the 5 years before that, the 5 years after that. And we can all remember back to times or periods or mentors that help us grow like that. And the interesting thing about listening to all these interviews of all the people that were around Alex is that he was the person that helped them all in that way. And that was so cool, was that even though it seemed like at times Alex was lost, he was changing all these people around him. He was changing their lives by asking them to imagine, where could you go? What are you afraid of? What's holding you back? Is it you? Is it really money? It's probably not money. Is it really your own intellect? It's probably not. It's yourself. It's just, what is holding you back? Imagine how far you could go if you just really went for it. And everyone around him kind of had that same story, that was how much he influenced them. And I think that was like the funnest reason to make this film, was we all need to be reminded of that. And I think he reminded everyone around him of that every single day.
It seems like he might have needed a bit of that himself, though, towards the end of the film, that he could have used somebody to come in and say, hey, let's do this, rather than having to come up with it himself necessarily.
Yeah, no, it was, I think there were a lot of us that were trying to help him figure out what was next for him and what that inspiration would be. And, you know, myself and a few other people did, you know, recommend, you know, going to India and trying to be inspired through helping other people. Even though he helped a ton of people along the way, it would be, you know, just, you know, giving himself to an orphanage where he could keep his hands busy and getting that sort of a reward, as opposed to the reward he was getting through traveling.
What do you think he would be doing now had he lived?
He was also an engineer, and he liked the idea of solving problems, which was a cool thing about him. He was really DIY, and he liked to sort of fix things himself and like figure out ways to solve problems. And he was always interested in these big picture problems, like what are some of the problems with the Earth, and maybe there's some simple, elegant solutions out there we can find. he had said something about how when he was at sea, he'd noticed all the plastic that's floating in this sort of like floating garbage problem that we have in our oceans right now. And I heard him spitball one time about like, maybe there's a way we can rethink how we make plastic cups or how we make plastic whatever, so that we could make the world a better place by making things differently or building things differently. I wonder if he would have tried to find a problem and fix it.
Or a series of problems, because it sounds like he was also the kind of guy who did fix them and then move on to the next one.
Certainly, yeah.
I could see him doing some sort of like sustenance farming or something like that with a whole bunch of kids, because I know he always wanted to have more kids than his dad, and I could see him just having a huge family.
He has 13 brothers and sisters.
I was going to say he's one of 14, so yeah, that's quite ambitious. Yeah, to think that.
His goal was to outdo his dad from a child perspective. So, if he would have gotten anywhere close, it would have been a huge family.
The film, since we haven't said it enough, it's Chasing Bubbles is the name of it. And I want to thank you guys so much for doing it and making the film. And what a great tribute to a wonderful person that I feel.
Thank you, Bonnie.
I feel like I know him after this. And I think that's a pretty terrific thing.
Oh, cool. Yep. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Bonnie.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Chasing Bubbles screens at the Milwaukee Film Festival this afternoon at 4 and Sunday evening as well. We spoke with filmmakers Ross Gerber and Topher Cochran via Skype and Milwaukee-based editor Chris Thompson here in the studio. You can read more at WUWN.com.